we take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello, I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
Welcome to Fusion Patrol. Tonight, we have got a treat for you. Actually, no. We have a treat for me.
And it's all wrapped up in shimmering gold.
It's wrapped up in shimmering gold. Tonight, we're going to be talking about the Star Lost again, and we're going to be looking at the episode, The Return of Oroth. And I really, it will be a treat. Like I said, it's a treat for me. How are you this evening, Ben?
Oh, not too bad.
Oh, good. Well, are you ready?
Well, about as ready as I'll ever be.
All right, let's start with a summary of this amazing episode. And then I'll tell you why it's such a treat for me. Devon discovers a crazed man named Williams desperately attempting to get into the Master Control Center. He fails, but when Devon summons medical help, he is granted access to Master Control, where he meets Tau Zeta, the new second-in-command of the Ark. Tau Zeta is a robot, and the new commander is the alien Oro, who is now returning to the Ark. He has used his journey to study the Ark and its systems, and has prepared Tau Zeta and the computers to rescue the Ark and take it to his planet Extar. Devon is not convinced, but everyone else is. Oro insists that he will not enforce his rescue on them if they don't all unanimously want it. Devon doesn't. Everyone else does. Oro says, "I'm leaving." Of course he doesn't. He's on a mission to take the Ark back to his world for its advanced technology. He locks up Devon and dupes the Stupos, Rachel and Garth, into helping him. A final confrontation comes, and Devon argues his case before Tau Zeta and becomes the new commander of the Ark. He shows compassion and doesn't have Oro killed, but Oro's superiors are not as kind. They destroy Oro's ship, forcing him to stay on the Ark to complete his mission of bringing it to Extar. The episode ends with Oro, a fugitive on the Ark, and planning his next move. Well,
Extar?
Extar.
No.
Isn't it?
Xar.
Xar?
Yes, there's no T.
Well, I guess we're done then.
Okay, show's over.
Xar. It's hard to say. I mean, Walter Koenig does have a speech impediment, as best I can tell. I think it's because he's trying to suppress his natural Russian accent, and it just doesn't sound natural to me. Well, I will explain why I am so happy about this episode, because it is so bad. I tell you, as some listeners would know, we've been doing episodes of Otherworld, and it's so incredibly bad too, but it's bad in a different way. It's bad in a boring, dull, I have nothing to talk about. But this one's so bad, we've got something to talk about. I'm so happy. I'm really overjoyed that we have this level of quality crud to talk about. So, I may have tipped my hand a little bit there, but what did you think of this episode?
Believe it or not, I did not actually hate this episode.
I'm going to admit something, too. And I said this as soon as I finished watching it. I said, do you know, that episode was incredibly bad, but it's the best this entire series has produced.
Absolutely agree. I absolutely agree. It was the best series, best episode of the series.
But it so stinks still.
It's pretty stupid, but it was, but I, when I compare it to past episodes that we've seen, and I was going over the, I was looking at the list of Star Lost episodes we've done, and all I could do is when I finished watching this one, all I could do was walk away and say, you know, I didn't hate it. Not like I hated some of the past.
Well, there are some things in this episode that I really, really dislike.
There are some things that are really dumb, but
that too.
As a whole, I did not hate this as opposed to some past episodes like Mr. Manchester or the implant people. I mean, like, those I just thought were a real just abominations. And this one did not piss me off quite to that level.
So, how do you, did you, I don't even know what I mean. There's so much to buy fun with. What about Devon? What about Devon in this episode?
Well, Devon, well, right from the very moment he walks up, the very first time we see him on the screen, it was very, very strange. And to this right even now, I'm still having a very hard time trying to put words to it. Because as you said in your synopsis, you've got this really whacked out guy, Williams, who's trying to break in. And it sets off an alarm. And Devin comes running in and he's like, hey, what are you doing? And he's like yelling at him in a rather belligerent sort of way. And I keep thinking, this seems a little atypical.
This is belligerent, Devin. We've seen him once in a while. I think we saw him in one other episode where it was belligerent Devin as opposed to usually passive and.
He doesn't know how to be just yelling over the noise, Devin.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it felt very strange. And even that now, granted. I have no reason to trust Oro, you know, as an observer, because I obviously he has a hidden agenda. And so.
But I didn't feel they left on those bad of terms at the end.
No, I didn't either. So for Devin to be that suspicious of Oro felt inappropriate for this story. I could better buy Rachel and Garth's. I could follow their willingness to go along with it. I found their believability in Oro to be far more credible than Devin's lack of confidence in anything Oro had to say. I mean, because what did we get out of the first episode? Okay, Oro has his own agenda, but it was at
no point. To save himself.
Right, it's to save himself. But at no point was it ever malicious.
Nope, not at
all. Yet Devin is behaving as if everything Oro is doing is to not only serve himself, but to harm others at the same time.
And that's the difference. There's no, yeah, I mean, sure, okay, maybe they do have an agenda for bringing the Ark, but that doesn't.
It does not give Devin the right at that point in the story
to
behave in that manner.
Right.
No, his assumption was, I felt completely inappropriate for that stage of the story.
At any stage of the story, his attitude was I mean, you mentioned him running up to Williams, right? What we see is the story open and Williams is trying to get in this door and he's kind of beat up and sort of, it looks like he's trying to plant bombs or something. And an alarm goes off because the door keeps warning him. And an alarm goes off and that's when Devin comes barreling around. Hey, what are you doing here? And he says, I got to get in there. And he says, well, that alarm means you're not supposed to be in there.
And that line really frosted me because I thought, okay, Devin, what have you and your two compatriots have been trying to do this entire time?
You've been trying to do, you know, they know there's nobody behind these security systems. So what is the problem with going through a secure access only door if it's for a crew that's been dead 400 years? I don't understand it.
And it made no sense.
Completely made no sense. And then they tried the whole, the guy gets knocked out by the stun beam. So he goes and asks the host, is there something we can do? Is there medical assistance? And the host says, yeah, he'll wake up, but second in command wants to talk to you. And go on in. You've got security access or something like that. It's like, okay.
Yeah, you have gold clearance, pending approval, something like that.
Yeah. And he goes in and they've got some sort of command center and there's this big stupid looking robot.
Cousin to Marvin from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
You know, it reminded me of Crichton from second season Buck Rogers if he'd gone overweight.
Ooh, okay.
You know, so expand out about 25 times and turn it into a sort of matronly woman.
Tau Zeta just made me laugh. Oh, so you're Devin. Sorry about the racket. This goes on all the time. Doesn't bother me, though.
Yeah.
Wow, what lines.
Waka waka. It was a robot with personality.
And we get the feeling, and actually Tau Zeta tells us that it has been around for a very, 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 very long time.
Mm-hmm.
So why are we hearing about Tau Zeta now? Because as the episode goes on, Tau Zeta's got a pretty omniscient presence throughout the entire story.
Well, based on what Oro says, and I see no reason to believe that this was a lie on his part, basically they're completely running the Ark with the exception of not being able to steer it and not being able to start the engines. But everything else is being run by Tau Zeta and the computers.
I know, but why the total lack of communication? Because everything that we really get, I mean, okay, like the sphere projector. I mean, you know, in the past, we've heard his voice spoken, you know, several times throughout, you know, a particular story whenever some kind of weird situation with the ship is going on. Not this time. This time we're hearing Tau Zeta. and only Tau Zeta.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was a little peculiar that, okay, now you're dropping, now you're giving us the smoking gun, so to speak. You're giving us this robot that we've never heard before. And I refuse to accept the idea that it's simply because it's just outside mission control.
Oh, and also.
Or master control.
Master control. It's not mission control. Yeah, it's master control. And the other thing is that Oro says is that even, or not actually Oro, I think it's Tau Zeta that says it, that everything is self-automated except steering or navigation and starting up the engines. And the computers have all the information necessary to do that. So actually, it's just a question of somebody getting the information from the computer and doing those things.
I just figured that with everything that Garth, Rachel, and Devin are doing, that Tau Zeta, if Tau Zeta had intended to be a part of the show from the beginning, that we would have heard something before this.
Well, I have a theory about that. I'll save it for a little bit later. But
it now does beg the question, will we see or hear from Tau Zeta again? I kind of think no.
Oh, I'm sure no. Well, okay. Well, let's just talk about it. I mean, I feel like this episode was an attempt to turn the series a little bit.
I agree.
Obviously, we've introduced Oro as the villain on board the ship who may or may not return from time to time if there were enough additional episodes after this.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, my cynicism about how bad the writers were. I mean, Devin's the commander of the Ark now. Officially, he is the commander of the Ark.
Officially.
And
what are they going to do with that, I wonder?
Nothing at all. We will never hear it again.
We will never hear from it again, just like we don't hear from all those kid trainee pilot engineers, whatever.
That's all we need.
Like, yeah.
We've got the computers. We've got Tau Zeta. We know where those kids are. We are golden.
We have everything that we need to get this ship on course, and we're just going to dismiss all of it.
And Oro had the engines ready for startup.
Yep.
And they're going to totally forget this. But I do kind of feel like they were trying to salvage the format a little bit somehow and maybe introduce the wacky robot.
And I also kind of get the feeling – I agree. I was going to bring this up later, but since you mentioned this now, yeah, I kind of get the feeling – and please pardon the pun – that they were trying to maybe shift a little bit from the so-called anthology show that it had been, which clearly it wasn't working, into trying to create some sort of an arc, if you will, of a storyline. Yeah, really. But you get what I'm trying to say here, that they were trying to create some sort of a continuing storyline that is more than just Devin, Garth, and Rachel bumbling into, you know, whatever situation
the Dome of the Month.
For the week. Yeah, Dome of the Month or whatever.
Dome of the Week Club.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, what is up with Williams?
That's a good one. What is up with this guy? Where does he come from? And what is this insanity? I got to get off the ship. You know what? That is a pretty freaking huge ship. I can't believe you're claustrophobic for one second.
I got to get in there. I got to get into that room. I got to get into that ship. It's not claustrophobia. He wanted into Oro's ship just because he had to get in it.
There's something very pathological about this guy.
And he did not, as far as I can tell, in any way advance the story whatsoever.
Not one bit.
They could have jettisoned him and there would have been no difference whatsoever in this story.
I kind of get the feeling that Williams was used at times as some sort of attempt at comic relief, which gave the story a very disjointed kind of feeling.
I didn't find him funny.
No, I didn't find him funny, but I kind of get the feeling that's what they were attempting to do.
I have another theory, and that's totally based on nothing at all. I think they'd contracted him to be the guest star in this episode, and then somebody came along and said, we need to bring back the alien Oro. We need an alien. And they said, well, but we've already contracted our guest stars. Put him in this episode. And then they rewrote the part or something with this actor, because he's a well-known actor. I don't know his name off the top of my head, but you'd see him a lot in TV shows back in those days. So, I mean, as you know, many of the character actors have been in this series along the way. This guy was immediately recognizable and it's like, oh, yeah, yeah, I'm sure he's been in an episode of Columbo, you know. But it's the only reason, it's like really the first time they've had two sort of main guest stars. And this guy was just superfluous at every level.
Not the first time, but in this case, you are correct in that he felt highly irrelevant.
Well, two of them of some name. I can't think of any episodes that had two guest stars that were like the obvious casting coup guest star. I mean, John Colicos and Lloyd, well, not Lloyd Bachner. This is the guy who reminds me of Lloyd. But, you know, in the case where there's more than one star, there's usually one guy that's like the actor, you know, and then the other people are not. And in this case, I suppose Walter Koenig.
But yeah, he, because of his Star Trek pedigree, that gave him some kind of, I don't call it sci-fi credibility, but it gave him sci-fi recognition.
But, you know, based on this portrayal, I see where he got the part of Bester in Babylon 5. That sort of sneering, smirking, I'm a smiley evil guy.
maybe.
In fact, if he had at any point said, be seeing you, Devin, I would have like, oh, no. I got it. There we go. That one's it's fine. So end of this episode, the arc, everything, we're basically ready to go. All we have to do is to go ask Tal Zeta where those computers are that tell us how to restart the engines and steer. And
we're good to go.
We're good to go. You know, problem solved. But instead, we've created an enemy of the alien, Oro. His planet still wants to steal the Ark, and Williams is left because I got to get out of this place.
I know that we're really jumping the ship here and skipping a lot of the inner, you know, the details of the story itself. But it brings up a good point. This really would have been a great opportunity to completely take the show in a very, very good direction. They could have, at that point, really pulled all the resources that we'd seen and all the little breadcrumbs that they dropped throughout the series from the beginning. This could have been the great opportunity to finally, as we said, get the Ark back on course. Still keep the Oro storyline. Still keep that going and have him be the threat trying to constantly undermine Devin's attempt to get the Ark. I mean, assuming that they get the Ark started up again and it's back on course and going to the planet that they'd originally intended for it to go to. And now you've got Oro who's trying to completely undermine that and hijack it back to Exar. So there was, you could still have both of these things going on. You could still have Oro being the threat for the sake of his planet and at the same time still actually have done something productive with the show and salvage the Ark and send it, you know, get your brand new crew on, into the bridge and, you know, have the engines fired up and have the ship going, you know, away from this Class G solar star that still bothers me to its destination. They could still have done that, but all the indications are that they didn't.
Next week, we will totally not see this again.
We will have forgotten that this ever happened.
Every bit of it, yeah.
Is it any wonder Harlan washed his hands of this?
No, but I doubt very much that these are the reasons why he washed his hands of it.
No, but not to get too far off this, but I would like to have seen. Okay, I've read the graphic novel. Harlan's first story bears little difference from
exactly
what's aired. But I would have liked to have seen where the show would have continued going had he stayed on.
I have my interest in seeing what that is, but at the same time, I have a feeling that it's not as radically different as
it may not be as radically different, but I would be as stupid as this show has become.
I hope not. They definitely, this show suffers from the same kind of slack weasel writing that used to bug me in the original Battlestar Galactica, where apparently nobody on the writing team had the slightest clue what the difference between a galaxy and a solar system and the universe were. And they used those words completely interchangeably.
Absolutely. They just threw them about there without any sort of consideration as to what they meant and not even taking into account that you might actually have intelligent fans watching this thing. You know, last thing you want to do is you want to insult your viewers.
And take that one little tiny thing that used to bother me about Battlestar Galactica and write that large about Star Lost, where from week to week, nobody cares about the slightest logical consistency. Nobody cares about the slightest accuracy of any kind of scientific concept. Nobody gives any consideration to if A, then B kind of thing. You know, let's go back to the medical guys where, well, we released one guy who didn't know what he was doing and he was dying. So let's put him back in sleep and give up on this idea.
Yeah, because we don't want to do that again.
Or we find the crew that knows completely how to pilot this ship. And, well, you let's guys keep practicing keep then practicing. For some
one
day.
One day you might be very, very good.
Hey, do you guys know how to work the computers? Because you could, like, ask where the bridge is, and then we could, like, take you there. How about that? No, of course not. It just, it feels like a kind of carelessness to me.
I agree. Careless and ignorance. And that is the thing that has just bothered me about this show from the very beginning, that they really did not seem to invest any energy or any thought into trying to make an attempt at writing a quality story that might give that might actually have some kind of quality to it. I mean, I don't know how else to put it, but yeah, the show has just been insulting from the very beginning.
There was one thing in this episode that made me laugh out loud.
Only one.
Well, yeah, this is a different kind of laugh. I mean, actually, I found it funny, not I found it laughable. Subtle difference. I found a lot of it laughable, but that's more of a... But this was a genuine... First off, it was a WTF moment. And then when I found out what it was, I laughed. Okay. And that was Tau Zeta's auto-bleeping of William's speech.
And the onboard censoring. Yes, I knew it. I thought that's what it was.
It's like, wait... So Williams is talking and then he says something and it's bleeped, just as in classic censor bleep. Beep. Yeah. And then he says again, beep.
Says it twice. And then he realizes what just happened. What was
well,
that?
The funny thing is like nobody seems to notice it for a few seconds. And then suddenly it's like, what caused those noises? suddenly we, the audience are like, wait, that was on set. I thought that was the censor bleeping the show.
Exactly. I thought that was a production
and then
thing.
Tau Zeta says, robots are very susceptible to inappropriate language. Like, wait, you're a robot and you had to know what he was saying to bleep it. So how can you be?
Yeah, exactly.
But it does not compute. That does not compute. It's like that should have kirked the computers right there.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very funny.
Yeah. And, it's hysterically funny. I mean, it was bogus, but it was funny.
And so why? Why was this in this story? Who? Obviously, it was for the audience. Obviously, it was some sort of meta humor.
It served. Yeah, that's the only thing I can think of because it serves no purpose for the story. I mean, because later on, and actually, I was reading William's lips as he was saying it. He was saying "stinking."
That's what I thought.
And yet he says it later
and it doesn't bleep
because stinking, you know, it's not an offensive word. And he says it right in front of Tau Zeta anyway. So that's not the issue. It was done purely as some kind of joke and not a well thought out one.
Episode 13, leaving it a little long before you decide the show needs a little bit of humor. Because have there been any bits of comedy, intentional comedy? At all in this entire series.
No. Lots of laughable moments, but never has there been any intentional comedy until this one, at least an attempt at it.
Do you think that somebody sat back and said, our show's just not doing as well as Star Trek. What did they have that we don't have? And somebody said, you know, they had a sense of humor.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if we're going to go conspiracy theories here. I wouldn't be surprised if that was something that was added on set because Walter Koenig happened to have been there. And said, you know, when we were doing Star Trek, we always made a joke every now and then. And I think that's what your show needs to kind of punch things up.
Your characters don't have any humanity. So you need more of that. And that's humor. The problem is, of course, that the humor didn't derive from the characters in any way, particularly not our characters who were as stoic, irritating, stupid, lamb-like as always. Take your pick as to which character you're talking about there. Belligerent, humorless. Humorless is the word on all of them. Williams, as you say, was, if he was meant to be comic relief, he was terrible comic relief.
Mm-hmm.
But he also had one decent line. When he fell off the ladder, and Devin goes, "Are you all right?" And he says, "Of course I'm not all right. I've fallen down and broken my foot," which is not the funniest line ever, but it's the funniest character line in the entire series.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the dynamic of Devin, Garth, and Rachel in this episode.
Ugh.
Now, from the moment we see Devin, but Devin is on the rag the whole time.
Oh, boy.
He is, you know, nasty to Williams.
He's cranky this time.
Cranky. He's, when he sees Oro, you know, Oro gives him, Devin, my friend, welcome. I am coming back from Transylvania. And, or XR, or whichever scout. It is. And Devin is, all scowls.
What do you want?
I've come back, my friend.
What do you want?
Why, Devin, you don't trust me.
Well, I hope you realize I think of you as my friend.
You haven't answered my questions.
Yeah.
And so he comes back and he says, I've got all this stuff. I fixed up your computers. I got your robots working. I got the Ark working. I'm about to start the engines, take you to the planet XR. We're going to have a blast. And Devin's like, who said we wanted to do that? And of course, on the flip side, Garth and Rachel are like, yay, it's the day we've been waiting for. We're going to fix the navigation systems. We're going to fix the engines. And we're going to go to a habitable planet and not smash into
and
a Class G solar star. Except, of course, that they weren't animated like that. They were, Devin, this is the day we've been waiting for.
I trust him. Yeah. Why don't you?
Why wouldn't you? Yes. And then when it gets down to it, and I did think this was, again, this was different. There's been that dynamic occasionally with Garth and Devin don't get along. Like some episodes, they're the best of pals, and other episodes, they're obviously rivals. And in this episode, it's completely different. In this episode, it's, Devin, we're kind of tired of you bossing us around. You know, you don't speak for us. We have our own opinions, and you're not our boss.
Yeah, he really sort of appointed himself as the de facto leader in all of this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And when they didn't like that, he was like, what's wrong with you? It's like,
I know better.
Come on. I'm right here.
In fact, I know so better that I'm going to debate Oro to become commander of the Ark.
Mm-hmm. Well, now let's save that for a little further down the line. But yeah, I mean, so they just basically split up and abandoned him. And so that he can be with Williams so that they can have two stories going on at once. I don't know. It was kind of Oro.
Bad story writing again.
Yeah. So Oro, says these things like, well, I'm not going to force it on you. So I'll just leave then. And he goes back to his ship. And of course, that's when he reveals that, Devin's right.
He does have a hidden agenda. But it's at this point that had Devin been privy to Oro's little conversation with XR, then I could see Devin becoming all of a sudden very, very much opposed to anything that Oro wanted to do. But this is the first big reveal.
All they had to do was to ask Oro and say, look, okay, thank you for coming to the ship. Thank you for learning all about it. Thank you for getting it ready. Let me ask you a question. Can you start the engines? Can you turn control of – let's ignore the navigation issue for a second. Can you get the engines going? What if we don't want to go to XR? Let's get the ship working. Let's debate XR later. But there's never seems to be, his I'm going to rescue you. They never ask him. Devin never asks him if the two have to be inextricably linked. Because if he truly was there to help them, then he would say, all right, well, fine. I'll start the engines for you. I might as well. I'm here. I've come all this way. I've learned all this stuff. I'll start the engines for you. I think you ought to come to XR because we'd really, do what you want. But if you don't want to come to XR, that would be fine. And
intelligent storytelling, because that would imply that Oro has he's going to be really crafty at trying to win over the confidence of Devin in this process. But instead, all we got was no, you need to come to XR. I mean, what other alternatives do you have? There is nothing. I mean, he was almost presenting the idea that there's nothing else out there. There's only death. That's it. My way or you die.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's the argument that he kept using. In fact, that's the argument he sort of used at the very beginning, and then after showing the footage of
the travel log
the travel log of Earth that he tried to pass off as Exar. Between those two things, yeah, he was easily able to win over Garth and Rachel onto his side, and he even won over Williams.
And they're very close to Exar, too, because Tal Zeta was able to scan it a little bit and kind of come up with an extrapolated atmosphere and living conditions on the planet, which presumably they've been able to do all along and just aren't, or, you know, looking at other planets. Maybe that's part of their – maybe that's part of the probe system of the Ark, is to scan planets for this kind of information. And so Exar might be rejected as a Earth-like habitable
world. As a candidate.
World, as a candidate world, yeah. Because she did say human life would be at sub-civilization levels or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah. When he goes down to check on and leave, supposedly, he calls back to Exar. And that's when they reveal that his job is to get the Ark to Exar at any cost. And why he had to do the ruse of, well, it's got to be all of you or I'm just going to leave, when in fact he's going to go do it anyway. And instead, he had three out of four of them, if we count Williams. Plus, he had full control of the computer systems. He could have said, well, you're outvoted, Devon. And so we're going to go to Exar. What would Devon have done differently? Mm-hmm. Why the ruse of saying, okay, well, then, it's fine, I'm going to leave then.
It serves no purpose. I mean, if he's trying to play some sort of a psychological game, it makes absolutely no sense for the sake of the story.
Yeah.
Because already Rachel and Garth are standing in opposition to Devon in terms of this decision. So
– and Williams.
As well as Williams. So what was he trying to do? Trying to use some sort of reverse psychology to win Devon over?
And it basically undermined his plan completely. Because then when they find out that he's trying to get the engines going, it's even more proof to Devon that he was lying in the first place. Because he was. It's like, oh, so you're going to start the engines anyway, are you? So I see you were lying about that whole unanimous consent thing. And I think that's the point where Oro comes clean. It's like, you know, you stupid Earthlings have made this incredible technological achievement, which is beyond anything we superior intellectuals could do on our planet. I thought that was an interesting aspect. I mean, not their arrogance or anything like that. But it's actually kind of cool because Oro has been presented as their superior all the way down the line. From the first story, you know, he's a much more advanced alien. They're technologically better. They're smarter, the whole nine yards. And, of course, Devon, Garth, and Rachel are farmhands. So, mm-hmm. Of course, he's smarter than they are. But now we're getting to the point where we realize, actually, the Ark is more advanced than the technology of Exar.
Which is obviously, which is why they want it.
Humanity was actually in excess of these people.
Yes, they were.
And that's kind of cool, actually.
it implies that there are certain civilizations, well, like the kids who are in training, that would imply that they actually have more technological knowledge than Oro does.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Kind of nice that humanity had advanced to that point.
Yeah, well, yeah. But and how far we've fallen so that it's in the hands of three farmhands?
Well, then you have to go to the whole backstory about, you know, what kind of different communities all existed on Earth. So, yeah, there's that entire big mess, which we've discussed in the past.
I wonder if there had been – I don't know. Would this show have been more credible if they hadn't been farmhands? They didn't have to be up to the level of knowing how to pilot the ship, but it does kind of – boggle credibility at times when they're so struggling to figure out what's going on because they are so backwards and inept. And they can't enlist the help of one single person from one single biodome that has a little bit more knowledge about technology than they do to go on this quest.
No, it's always just about the three of them. And sadly, in terms of how this show is produced, like with everything else, anything that they learn in the previous episode is conveniently forgotten in the next.
And just trying to put our heads inside the mind of Harlan Ellison, why did he choose that particular type of person? I kind of wonder,
this goes back to what I was just saying. I would have liked to have seen where the show would have gone if Harlan had not washed his hands of it and just, you know, and walked away from it. Obviously, he had an end goal. I mean, you know, for whatever reasons, you know, we may not like the pilot, Harlan has the reputation of being a very, very good writer.
He can write.
He can write pretty damn well when he wants to. And I have to believe that he had some kind of design for this series as it was going to go on. Maybe, yes, maybe be an anthology series. But I must believe that he had an idea that there was going to be some thread of progression.
He did.
That would carry forward.
He has said that there was.
And clearly there isn't any now.
Clearly there isn't any.
So obviously there was a reason why he did pick them, why he did pick farmhands or Amish or Mennonites, whatever you want to call them. There is a reason why he picked these three very simple people. Maybe it's to present this overall, you know, the classic underdog kind of image. I don't know. But he had a reason for picking them. The sad part is, though, is because the way this series was handled after he walked away from it, whatever reason was there is now long lost.
I know. And I just can't help feeling that he walked away from it with a phrase like this. I'm looking at the shooting script and you've changed 15 lines of my brilliant, masterful original script. And I thought the irises should be in the floor, not the wall. I'm leaving. I'm out of here. Unfortunately, that's the reputation that Mr. Ellison has earned.
Does have that kind of reputation, but I kind of get the feeling that maybe it wasn't something like that. It might have been something like around the third episode where he thought, wait a minute, I had this character twist that I wanted to do here. Because usually that's what he's really big on. He likes to change situations so that characters are forever changed. That's what he likes to do. And I have to believe that maybe that there was something was done or something was removed that would have forever altered the character of Devin, Rachel, and Garth, you know, be it one, two, or all three of them.
They could have turned Devin into a man.
Yeah, who knows what they were going to do. Maybe they saw that Harlan was actually trying to advance them as characters, and maybe somebody said, you know, let's not rush that. Let's keep them as simple farmhands for a few episodes longer. And I could see that pissing off Harlan to the point of saying, okay, it's your baby. You do what you want. I'm walking away.
And change my name on the credits.
Yeah.
I am the Cordwainer. Yeah. And this, I think, this episode just feels like somebody's attempt to try to regroup.
I agree. Especially, you know, when you see where it sits in the production and in the broadcast schedule. I mean, this was two episodes. It's in the last few episodes. So he kind of got the feeling. I mean, I don't know how soon these episodes were airing after they were produced. But given the quality, the very, very poor quality of episodes from the very beginning, it wouldn't be too hard to assume that, you know, a third of the way into the broadcast schedule, somebody in the studio had thought, oh my God, this thing's a piece of garbage. We need to turn this thing around fast. You know, but by that point, they had 2/3, if not 3/4 of the first season already in the can. Too little, too late.
And this is also, and even though we've seen this before, where, okay, we're going to leave you kids in this practice bay and we'll come back later. Or you guys start working from your angle and try to find something and we'll keep looking our angle or whatever it is. There's always this kind of, well, not always, but in some domes, there's this kind of notion that perhaps someday this might be brought back up, but then it never is.
It never is.
But I don't ever feel like when they walk away from them that they really are going to bring them back.
No.
This is the only time when Oro, they says, okay, Oro, you're a fugitive. And he turns back and he smiles and he emotes for just a second. That's the first time when I felt the episode ended that it was like, there's more.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. That's the first time I ever got the feeling that, okay, this story is not over. They're going to revisit this.
Spoilers, it's over.
Yeah, well, but for reasons out of their control.
There is more return of the return of Oro.
No, no Oro's revenge or Oro strikes again. None of that. Like, you know, but if that happens, you know,
Oro strikes gold.
Yeah. Swearing it. But I, to be honest, I kind of think that they were probably going to save Oro for this, the first episode of season 2.
or perhaps a series finale where he's just doing something, you know, there's going to be a big cliffhanger at the end and he's just about to blow up the Ark or something unless he gets his way. And
well, there were two unaired episodes and were unproduced. I don't know. So maybe he was supposed to be in one of them. But yeah, there was clearly a design to have him come back. There was no question about it. I mean, you bring Walter Koenig back for a second episode, the first guest star to have that kind of honor, if you will. Oh, there was no question he was going to be a returning guest character. No doubt about it. It was very obvious in the way they wrote it. But you're right. In other episodes we've seen in the past, like with the kids on that simulation, that computer simulation bridge, it was so obvious that, okay, goodbye, good luck, have a nice life. We will never see you again. Every single episode we've had up to this point has always been this very
– And I think it was
– very unpleasant sense of finality of that particular storyline.
I think it would have been – I think it was two episodes later they could have used those kids.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was – that was the problem is it's not just that, well, we're not going to see them again. But they've been wiped from the memory of
– It's like totally forgotten.
Yeah, totally, totally forgotten. It's like we haven't found anything so far except, oh, when an alarm goes off, you're not supposed to go in there. Doggone it, that could be important. Could be a medical bay or something.
I'm trying to think. It might have been circuits of death, something. But, yeah, there was so many opportunities to have the kids come back and blown opportunities all over the place.
Absolutely. So Oro is kind of crafty in this episode. He gets Devin locked up with Williams by pretending that Rachel's been hurt and taken to a medical dome where she's being taken care of, which is another one of those things like, wait, there's more people? We already know about the astromedics, but now there's a medical dome and there's people in the medical dome? But Devin doesn't care about that. He's just worried about Rachel's broken leg. And but that's just a ruse to get him to go into a room and get locked up. Meanwhile,
he's in the room that Williams is just dying to get into
because he's not allowed to get in there. And Garth and Rachel are kind of in the engine room. I keep calling it the CTR, but I couldn't remember what CTR stood for.
Computer thermonuclear reactor.
Computer thermonuclear reactor.
I don't know. That's all I can think of. But you're right. That's the only thing that comes to mind. Computerized thermonuclear reactor room. I don't know.
Anyway, he kind of sets them up as like, okay, you know, if Devin comes along and tries to screw this up, you're going to ruin your only chance. So he's really trying to get them to act as guards, that if Devin comes, that they're going to turn against him. And they don't, but they kind of do. I mean, like, we don't really agree with you, Devin. You know, that sort of thing.
Really whiny in it.
He really whiny. He's like, Garth, go rescue Williams. I left him in a shaft.
Oh, I have to rescue him again.
Why do I have to rescue him? Why don't you go rescue him?
I rescued the last guy. It's your turn now.
Would you please go do this and rescue him?
Oh, okay, fine. I have to rescue them every single time.
Tell me, where is he? Jump tube, he's there. It's like, access port, jump tube, you'll find him. Like, in that ship, sure, they'll find him.
Yeah, really.
I believe they said when they were in control center or whatever it was, master control, that the CTRs were exactly 12 kilometers straight down.
Yes.
And
bit of a hike.
And Devin and Williams get into an air vent and they're going down this incredibly fake looking ladder, which is obviously on the floor and shot at an angle so that it looks like it's down.
Right.
And they're climbing down this ladder, and it looks like they go about one floor.
We're there.
Then they kick. No, I think Williams the first vent.
Yeah, he kicked the first.
He kicked the first vent, and that's when he fell, and Devin left him down on a sort of a catwalk down a couple stories, and Devin leaves him. Now, think about this. Garth and Rachel are 12 kilometers below master control. Devin has gone down to quote-unquote level 5, whatever that is, because that's what the computers say. He's now on level 5, so however far level 5 is from master control. But there's just no indication that he made it 12 kilometers
is
down this ladder.
Is it possible that just as we know that there are inertia tubes that allow you to travel some of the pylons, you know, at really great distance, is it possible that maybe there's one for like a vertical?
Well, I wouldn't surprise me that they took that once he got off there, he got in the jump tube and went down to the CTR.
It would have been nice to have seen it.
It would have been nice to see it, but the part that
there.
But the part that didn't make sense to me was that he then tells Garth, oh, he's in the service shaft, which incidentally they've never seen before. So Garth wouldn't know what a service shaft if it'd been him.
No, exactly.
And then after he finally convinces Garth to go, Garth says, okay, well, tell me where to find it. And Devin's explanation is, it's the jump tube. There's an access tunnel. Like, so how about go up to level 5, jump up to level 5? How about climb 11 kilometers up that access port and you'll find him? What? Yeah, it was just careless. It just go out there, fly straight to the edge of the universe, make a left at the solar system, and first galaxy, third planet. It's Galactica's star system mechanism again.
It is very thoughtless writing.
Yes. So now Devin's just trying to convince Rachel, because he's got Stupo Garth out of the way. So he's just got Stupo Rachel in there. And that's when Oro comes in with a gun. And Devin's going to try to stop him by pulling out the little isolinear crystals or whatever they want to call them.
Oh, let's just build them all randomly. Woo-hoo.
I'm about to pull a few of these out of there. I'm going to sabotage our engines. That's what I'm doing. He pulls a few of them out there and Oro says, well, I'm the commander of this ship and that's mutiny and I'm going to kill you. And he tries to shoot him, and guess what?
Nothing.
Nothing. Tau Zeta won't let guns be fired in the CTR room.
Just like Tau Zeta will not let naughty words be spoken in its presence.
That's right. We won't let naughty guns go off in there either. And
I had no idea that room was in a state of temporal grace. It's a TARDIS.
And Oro is like, override that. I'm the commander. No, I can't do that. No,
sorry,
really. Override it.
Not going to happen.
So then he tries, so, Devin, we are of different opinions as to what should happen here. Instead of saying, I don't know, let's step outside and I'll shoot you. Or, I'm now going to club you over the head with this gun and hurt you. Or, just waiting. Or Devin and Rachel jumping him. I mean, when he fired the gun and it didn't work, Devin should have jumped him.
Precisely.
But he didn't.
Yeah, where was belligerent Devin then?
Yeah, there was just like, yeah, I told you I don't trust this guy, Devin. But all sorts of things could have played out there. But instead, Oro tries, let's put our arguments to Tau Zeta, and they will adjudicate who should be in command of the Ark. And Devin's like, yeah, sure, I'll do that. And well, here are the conditions. Winner becomes the commander of the Ark. Okay. Loser dies. Oh, okay. That sounds cool to me. So they go up to the control center again. They're put in the, oh, please help me.
The cone of silence.
If only it were the cone of silence. It is, in fact, the two cones of recycling.
I know.
In the middle of the control center.
In the middle of a master control room or a mission. Yeah, master control room. It's like, why are those there?
In case some robots go bad, they just push them into the center of the room.
And they get
room,
sucked right up.
And they put them in these tubes. And they have two of them because...
Yeah, why have two? Or why have one when two will do the job better?
Exactly. And because you have so much recycling from time to time in the master control center that you need to get two going at once. So each of them stands inside them, which are surrounded by a force field, which, you know, in case the recycling is trying to get out.
Hey, that recycling can get pretty pesky.
And then they make their statements like, the Ark is in trouble and I can save it. And Devin's like, we don't want you to. And then Terra Nova.
Terra Nova?
Terra Nova. Tau Zeta says, yeah, 104 points, Oro, 3 points, Devin. And they keep working their way up until at some point their arguments are good enough. And basically, Oro keeps winning the arguments. Up. And then finally Devin begins to make it back. And honestly, I don't know why. Did his arguments really ever change?
No, he was repeating himself over and over again.
He was repeating himself over again. It was basically, we have to do our own
stuff.
We have
stuff. A manifest destiny. We have to do our own thing.
And you can't tell us, and we're emotional, and you're not. And
it
that's
was his
the way
passion
we are.
That made the points go higher in his favor.
But Oro wasn't making a logical argument either. Neither one of them was making a logical argument. They were just like, I want to have control of the Ark. I want to take it to Axar. I don't want it to go to Axar. It was at that level. And yet Tau Zeta was, you know, evaluating the quality of their argument until such point that Devin won. And Oro then tries to rig the game and say, well, I'm the commander and I'm ordering you to reverse the decision. which I thought was a pretty snarky thing to try to do. And Tau Zeta goes, no, but you're biased against me. Tau Zeta goes, yeah, I am. I was programmed by humans. I like them. They're, you know, hey, so you're going to die now. And then, of course, this is where Devon gets his Kirk Devon moment.
Devon gets all, yeah, he puts his Kirk on. He gets all jellyfish on this one.
He's just like, no, don't kill him, but get off my ship.
Yeah, he'll be okay.
But get off my ship and out of here. I'm the commander now, so you scramoose, boy, and that's it.
Don't let the hatch hit you on the way out.
Yeah, take Williams with you, would you? He's got to get out of here. Has Williams gone by that point? Yes, Williams has left the story by this point.
Pretty much, yeah.
No, Garth, he did.
Garth rescues him, but we don't
and then he leaves.
See him again.
He says, I got to go.
I got to go, and that's it. We never see him again.
We never see him again, so by the time we start the adjudication, he's
out of the story.
For no apparent reason whatsoever.
Which just goes to show that he served no useful purpose.
He got Garth out of the way for a few minutes.
Oh.
Rescuing him in the thing.
Just knock Garth out for duration of the story, and that would have done it just fine.
You know what I would have done with these characters? I'd have given Garth narcolepsy. Then that plot point we could have used at any point. He just like...
Yeah.
Garth is out again. Well, see you at the end of the episode, Garth.
There's your comedy.
Garth, quick. We're about to be captured. Pull out your bow and arrow and shoot him. Okay, Devon. Yeah. Oh, not again. Convenient plot point. Well, you know, that wig was hard to make for him. It was very expensive, and so they didn't want to use it, so they'd keep him out of scenes as often as they could.
Mm. Is that it?
Or was that Hawk in Buck Rogers series 2?
Mm.
Oh, yeah, that was Hawk. Yeah,
it must be.
I will see you at the end of the episode, Buck. All right, Hawk, have fun on patrol. Yeah.
Yeah, didn't Hawk have a crossbow?
Yes, I think he did.
Actually, I think he did, yeah. We're on to something here.
Yeah, and he had funky hair.
And then it got Tau Zeta.
And Crichton. Series 2 Buck Rogers was, in fact, a remake of The Star Lost.
That's right. There it is.
That's all I have.
So Wilma Deering is Rachel?
You're lucky we're at the opposite end of Skype, because that is grounds for some serious thrashing. We will not impugn Wilma Deering here.
Hey, I like Wilma Deering.
Wow.
I just didn't start this whole comparison thing going here.
I really have nothing else for this episode.
I really don't have much else either. No, the only other thing that kind of gets me, it's this one little point earlier on. Again, this just kind of just goes to show about stupid characterizations. And there's a moment where Devon has already learned the truth about what Aura wants to do. And finally, Rachel and Garth have come in. And Devon is telling them, you know, look after Williams, whatever, do this. And he says, I'm going after Oro. I said, well, what about Oro? He said, well, no. Rachel wants to know what's going on. And all Devon would say is, this is between me and Oro. And I'm thinking, you idiot.
Idiot, yep.
Why aren't you telling them what it is that you learned?
Well, because they're too stupid to process it, and that's why he should be the natural leader.
Oh.
You know, there is a feel of that in this episode. I agree.
That is the feel of this episode, but it is still stupid.
Yes, it is. But then he's a farmhand, and let's face it, he's dumber than he thinks he is.
That's true.
I think manifestly, I'm pretty sure that mustache has grown back into his brain and is causing some problems.
You know, at one point, I could have sworn that I saw spirit gum attached to that mustache in this episode.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That cannot possibly be. That can't possibly be fake. It's so hideous, it can't possibly be fake. No makeup person would ever make that mustache and put it on somebody.
Just like no scriptwriter would write a story this bad and have it be filmed.
That is going to... Well, the worst part is now I'm going to be worried that thing's going to jump off and attack somebody. It's kind of like those creatures on Deneva in Star Trek.
So Devon's mustache is a single cell flying parasitical creature
that controls his brain.
Ah.
Mm.
It all makes sense now.
It does make a lot more sense now. Perhaps that was the big reveal that Harlan Ellison had in the third series.
That the brain was really in the mustache.
Turns out you've been fighting an unknown enemy all along. And it's Devin's mustache.
Devin's mustache.
That's actually the unfinished, unproduced script for episode 16. Devin's mustache.
Okay. Well, considering the nature of the, and then that's why Harlan left.
Damn it. I wanted to save the mustache for the third season. No, Harlan, we got to bring in the big guns early.
Could have been.
All right.
I mean, at this point, I wouldn't put anything past what Harlan had in mind versus what the showrunners actually did.
Well, folks, we only have two more episodes of The Star Lost.
And these – now, I will say that I think on the next episode is The Beehive, I think.
You know, we have three more episodes. I'm sorry.
Three.
There's three more.
That's right. Three more. That's right. But I do know that there's one of these episodes I actually saw a part of. There was an attempt to try and – I don't know if they were trying to generate new interest or they were just trying to recycle for trying to rake in some extra money. But I remember USA Network actually took several episodes of The Star Lost and created like a big 2.5-hour film.
Mm.
And it was hideously bad. And I remember that one of these upcoming episodes was actually used. It's only because Devin does an EVA. But I also remember when watching it that they actually managed to save the arc. They somehow managed to tweak the story just a little bit so that the arc gets saved and is diverted from its collision course with its Clash G
Solar Star.
That is the bane of my existence with this show.
I'm looking forward to these episodes in a way because
then the show will be over.
Well, what are we going to have to make fun of?
So you're desperately looking for a show that we can horribly mock.
Yes, in a way. At least there's something fun in this in Star Lost. It's like you have to give these people credit to be able to have sold this to somebody. Somebody paid them money. Somebody gave money to do this.
Well, remember, I think you've seen it because I know that I've seen it. There were some pretty grand ideas when they were coming into this show. Douglas Trumbull wanted to come up with a revolutionary way of creating some sort of an effect, some sort of a traveling mat. So he had some pretty big ideas. You had Harlan, who was going to be running the show, at least in terms of script supervision. So there was some.
And that other guy who couldn't get his name off the credits, and I can't think of who it is.
Scientific
Advisor.
Ben Bova.
Ben Bova, yes.
Ben Bova. So, yeah, there was these really big plans for this show. And I think that was where the push for money was at. And because you had all this talent and all these great ideas that were being thrown out, I'm sure that whoever forked up the money thought, oh, my God, what a great idea. And they threw them buckets of money, which then, we saw the result.
Well, three more episodes, and I have not seen any of them.
Except for that one little bit that got used in the movie, I have not seen these either. And the one about the bees, beehive.
It's funny thing about the movie is that I bet you the movie was not the alien Oro and the return of Oro stuck together, because that would have made sense.
It absolutely wasn't. There was nothing to do with Oro. It started off with the first episode, which the name.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, it started off with
an undiscovered country.
Yeah. And then ended with one of the last episodes, and just a bit of it where Devin has
Yokels
to do
Yokels in Space. That was it.
Which one?
Yokels in Space. That Yokels was the opening episode.
Oh, I thought it was mostly Amish.
Mostly. Anyway, we hope you'll join us again next time on Fusion Patrol.
End of line.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us, leave us a review on iTunes, or stop by and visit at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, search for Fusion Patrol, or just drop us a note at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf.